Pacifica Radio Network. You're listening to Cynthia's Midnight Oil, headquartered at KPFK Safe Harbor. Cynthia's Midnight Oil, raw, uncut, community power for your eardrums. Cynthia's Midnight Oil is where I can tell you the truth. Like, I want you to consider this show as your liberated zone, where the shackles on your mind are the first to go. You might get shocked, maybe even outraged, but my hope is that you will not think about things in the same way. That what you thought was conventional wisdom, you will soon come to realize might be conventional and also is not wisdom. Or, phrased another way, that your thinking will become less conventional and more wise. The great South African anti-apartheid leader Steve Biko said that the greatest weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed.
Sweating, it's hot up in this joint. Vocal, tank top on at this point. You're with a winner, so baby, you can't lose. I got secrets, can't leave Cancun. So take it off like you're home alone. You know, dancing in front of the mirror while you're on the phone. Checking your reflection and telling your best friend, like, girl, I think my butt getting big.
Now, last week, I told you that I might have some good news for you. And indeed, I do. No Lies Radio, a Pacifica Radio Network affiliate, will rebroadcast my shows on Thursday nights at 8 o'clock p.m. Pacific time and again on Saturday mornings at 10 o'clock Pacific time. That's 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. So that's Monday, Tuesday at kpfk.org, Thursday night and Saturday morning, all Pacific time, which is early afternoon Eastern time. So I want to thank Alan Rees at No Lies Radio for giving me and his listeners this opportunity. So now I promised a blow by blow on the Hillary Trump so-called debate. The whole world was watching, and it was a terrible display of what the U.S. has become. People inside the U.S. still have visions of grandeur, misled, unfortunately, by a sycophantic media that pawns and fawns and panders to the personalities resident in the U.S. deep state. If you were to ask the average American about television housewives or fake families promoting sexual predation, they could tell you all about that. Just ask them, however, about the policy positions of Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Well, that gets so little media attention, and what is there in the media is all wrong. It's just pitiful. Paul Craig Roberts calls the U.S. media prostitutes. I think that's cute. But unfortunately, he's not saying it as a joke. He's not saying that to be cute. He's describing a sad reality that has driven awake Americans to alternative and foreign news sources just to provide some balance to the palaver dished out 365, 24/7 on U.S. television and radio. In fact, nowadays, if you get most of your quote-unquote news from the U.S. press, more than likely, you are unarguably misinformed. A case in point is what happened to me this week. But before I get into that, I just want to give half a thought about the so-called debate, only because I promised last week that I would. So the Clintons are familiar with scandals. When you skate the law as regularly as they do, damage control becomes a way of life. And then when you're able, as Hillary has done, to pander to the deep state personalities that really run the show, totally and completely devoid of any moral considerations, you develop friends in high places who can help you out for a price. That price is complete loyalty to them. And for as long as you're useful to them, they will protect you from yourself. Because of such protection, then your foibles, peccadilloes, and predilections and weaknesses get even more out of control. So Bill doesn't ride the Epstein plane one time, he rides it a dozen times. Bill doesn't come on to one woman, he has his way with every woman, whether she wants his advances or not. And that's why there's always some self-induced scandal to save the Clintons from. But now we have to save ourselves from the Clintons. They're like the house guests who stay too long and go too far, don't clean up behind themselves, are wasteful, not turning off the lights. And after they've gone, you notice that the change you had in your top drawer has vanished with them. Remember, they had to return to the White House about $48,000 in furniture that they had left with. They paid for another $86,000 for other items that they took. So when you're closing the door on one successful visit, they pick up the phone to call and tell you what a wonderful time they had and to expect them for Thanksgiving. At any rate, even my mom called me to ask me if I watched the debate. She told me that there was something funny about that microphone of Trump's and to watch it again to see if I could verify her claim. Well, thank goodness I didn't have to watch the so-called debate all over again because the Presidential Debate Committee admitted that something was wrong with Trump's microphone. Well, I tell you one thing, he'd better go have a checkup. When I was in Venezuela at Hugo Chavez's funeral, the people there all suspected that he contracted his cancer from what else? Some microphone gizmo. Of course, now, I don't know how Chavez got his cancer, but well, Trump just had better be careful. Hillary snared a second round of GOP endorsements, exposing to anyone paying attention that they've been won for a long time, but that Trump has done something to the Republican Party that the warmongering, bankster, media-owning, neocon globalists don't like. And so they are abandoning the Republican Party and fleeing to Hillary in droves. Now, old man George Herbert Walker Bush, who can't remember his whereabouts on November 22nd, 1963, has endorsed Hillary. Her endorsements from Bush to Henry Kissinger represent a rogues gallery of U.S. war criminals, torturers, banksters, crooks, thieves, and all other assorted miscreants. Just as I was putting this show to bed, Hillary got yet another injection of Republican nanobots that include former members of Congress and Reagan and Bush apparatchiks. This gives me even more confidence in my proposal for U.S. voters to turn out in droves and vote ABC. Anybody but Clinton. Okay, so we've heard from a Libertarian Party representative, but poor Libertarian Party presidential candidate, former Governor Gary Johnson, failed his current events test and on national television asked, "What is Aleppo?" Now, this week, Johnson had another oops moment when he couldn't name one living world leader whom he admired. Now, you know, if he did name someone, and that leader was not on the I'm acceptable to neocons and Zionists list, then that would have been another round of sound condemnation from the prostitute U.S. media. But geez, he wasn't alone, however, as Dr. Jill Stein, the Green Party nominee, also wasn't quite up to the mark. Now, let's be clear. These are just campaign gotcha moments that have nothing to do with policy, which is supposed to be the basis of our vote. And we trust that our president would be able to assemble a competent staff and cabinet around him or her who could hit the ground running on day one of the new administration. So while this is exceedingly embarrassing for them both, in order for our ABC strategy to work, Libertarian and Green Party loyalists have to vote for their parties. Voters mustn't abandon their party because of an oops moment or two. But what about those people already on the fence? What should they do? My answer is still ABC. Now, what I think we should look into is what this does to the Libertarian Party overall strategy for 2016. So the question is, does Gary Johnson's oops moments completely eliminate his chances at achieving the Libertarian Party goal of throwing the election into the House of Representatives by denying Hillary the Electoral College votes to win outright? Libertarian voters were hoping to amass enough votes to deny both Trump and Hillary a majority of votes, popular and electoral. The Libertarian Party strategy was to trigger the constitutional provisions for the selection of the president and vice president, throwing the election to the House of Representatives, only the second time in the history of the U.S. that this has happened. In my opinion, though, I think Governor Johnson's repeated gaffes have reduced the probability and maybe even the possibility of Libertarian Party success in reaching this target. But let's be honest, it's not a neighborhood of bright street lamps that we're dealing with here. My hope is that Libertarian Party stalwarts will remain strong and those who are disaffected will go to the Green Party to help it achieve its 5%. The problem with this kind of party flight is that Dr. Jill Stein suffered her own oops moment when she too couldn't name three world leaders whom she respected that were also at least known in the world for their leadership. She gave three names, but they are not heads of state. She could have said that the U.S. has so corrupted global leadership that it's hard to find those of admirable qualities, and then listed non-heads of state with justification. However, unfortunately, she didn't do that and got excoriated by the prostitutes. My heads of state would be, not in any particular order, Vladimir Putin for standing up to U.S. bullying and doing what he could at the same time to prevent World War III, what I call the quote-unquote trio, Rafael Correa in Ecuador, who just proclaimed neoliberalism to be a failure, Daniel Ortega in Nicaragua, who has invited the Chinese to come in and build a rival canal to the U.S.-controlled Panama Canal, and I do acknowledge that there are some problems with that that have to be dealt with, and Evo Morales in Bolivia for standing up to the U.S. and starting a school of the Americas for Bolivian soldiers, but instead of teaching war and contempt for the people, he proposes that his military be taught the ways of guardians of the people. And then finally, Xi Jinping in China, for implementing as best he can, despite fierce U.S. opposition, the new Silk Road that promises peaceful trade and communication links throughout Asia, Eurasia, Europe, and Africa. What the five share is that they all are protecting the sovereignty of the states that they lead. And although He should be at the top of every anti-war, anti-globalist world leader list just for withstanding the Zionist onslaught and being reelected Labor Party leader, which just happened in the last few days. Jeremy Corbyn is now likely to be the UK's new next prime minister if Labour is able to defeat the reliable neocon puppet Theresa May. So on my list, I have 7 world leaders. But, and you know this is really a big but, the only media acceptable answer to that question is Bibi Netanyahu, whose relationship with the US is so close that there's not even one crack through which a ray of sunlight can come. Poor Gary tried, but couldn't even muster that, and instead could only utter the name of the dead Shimon Peres. When pressed to name a living leader, he finally admitted, "I guess I'm having an Aleppo moment."
What would you do if you were elected about Aleppo?
About?
Aleppo.
And what is Aleppo?
You're kidding.
No.
Who's your favorite foreign leader?
Who's my favorite?
Any, just name anywhere in the country, any one of the continents, any country. Name one foreign leader that you respect and look up to. Anybody.
Mine was Shimon Peres.
No, no, okay, I'm talking about living. Go ahead. You got to do this. Anywhere, any continent. Canada, Mexico, Europe over there, Asia, South America, Africa. Name a foreign leader that you respect.
I guess I'm having an Aleppo moment in the former president of Mexico.
But I'm giving you the whole world.
I know.
Anybody in the world you like.
But while these are admitted lapses, just so you know, the Libertarian Party is against all these wars, the Federal Reserve, etc. So the media have to focus on Aleppo moments rather than tell you the policy positions of the candidates and political parties. So, given all of this ignorance at the top, where does a disappointed Libertarian Party voter go? The answer is still the same. ABC, anybody but Clinton. They can go anywhere except to Hillary Clinton. In fact, they can stay right where they are, or they can help the Greens get their 5%. To shift gears a little and put what just happened to me on the table briefly. Briefly, because I literally just got a report that sends shivers up and down my spine. From what I just learned, it appears that the war is on. The switch has been flipped. A new theater in war is opening up, all paid for by U.S. taxpayers. We have got to stop this, not 15 years from now, like I'm just now getting cards and notes and emails from people saying, "Oh, I just found out about you and you were right back then, but I didn't believe you." No, not 15 years from now, right now. First, I'll describe what happened to me to make me fight back, and then I'll do a global war news roundup and let you know what mischief the U.S. is now making in yet another part of Asia. And the question is, is the U.S. now unleashing its own October surprise to present the new U.S. president a fait accompli in case that president is not Hillary? I think the answer to that question is yes. By the prostitute media, and I was forced to respond. Here I'm speaking with Ed Opperman of the Opperman Report about it. This is just an excerpt from his show, and the full interview will air on Friday on his show.
Okay, welcome to the Opperman Report. I'm your host, private investigator Ed Opperman.
And my situation, my particular situation that gives rise to the occasion of us speaking together now is because, you know, I just got sick and tired of being the punching bag for certain prostitutes in the media. And it just so happens that this time around is a fellow by the name of Jonathan Bernstein, who's writing for Bloomberg at the Bloomberg View, and the Charlotte Observer picked up the story. And so basically what Jonathan Bernstein is saying is that Howard Dean was irresponsible when he said that Donald Kane was sniffing, and so, you know, during the first debate, and therefore he must have been using cocaine or something like that. And so now in a story about that, he throws my name in as a peddler of conspiracies. So I just basically decided enough is enough, and I'm going to write about it. So I wrote a piece called Truth Foretold, Specious Journalism and Spurious Assertions. So now basically what I do in this piece is I go through the so-called conspiracies, quote unquote, that I did peddle, quote unquote, using his terminology. And I acknowledge, first of all, that I was, in fact, booted by pro-war Democrats. At that time, it was led by Rahm Emanuel, who is in the failing city of Chicago now as mayor. And those pro-war Democrats worked in concert with like-minded Republicans who wanted to prolong and extend the wars in which the United States was engaged. Remember, Wesley Clark had told us previously that there were at least seven countries on the table. Dick Cheney had told us that there were approximately 60 countries and that the U.S. was going to be at war for the next generation. So I went through, as best my recollection would allow me, to look at the so-called conspiracies that I peddled. I start with 2000, the 2000 presidential election with George Bush. And basically, the bottom line is that I said early on that there was election theft. I was the one that held a town hall meeting, called in Choice Point, that's right. Database Technologies is what they're called now. And called in Choice Point and put the company representative on the under oath. And he testified as to how the election in 2000 was stolen. So yes, I said it, I provided the evidence for it, and now everybody takes it for granted in 2016. Okay, so now the second thing was about the warnings that came into the Bush administration about an impending attack on the US. Yes, I said it. Yes, there was evidence for it. And now today in 2016, it's taken for granted. The third thing that I put on the table might be of concern, or that certainly caused me a lot of problem, was the 911 Victim Compensation Fund that I objected to, because I am a student of the COINTELPRO program. And so I understand how the courts can be used to get at the truth. But the 911 Victim Compensation Fund disallowed wrongful death lawsuits. And so it was like, you take this payoff and you're not going to file a lawsuit. So none of this information is going to be released publicly and going to go through the courts. Now, of course, we've seen the JASTA bill vetoed, which would allow lawsuits against the Saudis, Saudi Arabia. And of course, Saudi Arabia isn't the only entity that's involved. But certainly Saudi Arabia would roll over and tell on the remaining people who were involved in the 9-1-1 tragedy. So therefore, the fact that lawsuits have been thwarted, and we have the story of Ellen Mariani, who tried her best to do an independent lawsuit and just failed on all counts, finally having to settle. That lawsuits were not desired is clear now. It's clearly evident. Then the fourth thing was the attack on Iraq, the Iraq war, where, of course, you know, I was vociferously against U.S. In the war. Well, by the time, which was March of 2003, I had been kicked out of Congress for the first time. And so I was not there during the actual launching of the invasion, but I was there to cast a vote against the Iraq war. And now, of course, we've got the Chilcot report that has come out that has said everything in an official capacity that many of us, but particularly many of us who were not in the Congress, but that I said while we were in the Congress. And that is that Saddam Hussein's possession of weapons of mass destruction was a lie. And in fact, remember, they set up the young man, I can't remember his name, Scott, who was a U.S. citizen, and he said, no, Iraq doesn't have any weapons of mass destruction, and it turned out to be the case. The next thing was around Hurricane Katrina, and my criticism of Michael Chertoff, actually what I said was that Michael Chertoff should be arrested and charged with wrongful death because the Department of Homeland Security was actually arresting senior citizen homeowners and charging them with wrongful death because of their negligence, quote unquote, negligence in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. And so what I said to the secretary during a hearing was that if you're going to arrest them for negligence, maybe you should be arrested as well because you didn't do your job. And then, of course, there was a congressional report. And what did it say? It said exactly that, that Michael Chertoff failed to do his job. Then another thing related to that, which these people revel in, these Jonathan Bernstein types, was a fact that I received a phone call stating from it, actually the call was from a concerned mother who happened to work at the Red Cross, and she was concerned about the way the bodies during the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina were being dumped in Louisiana swamps. And so I mentioned it at a meeting that was recorded, and then of course, you know, everybody, you know, makes fun of it. But now, of course, we know that 911 human remains were dumped in a landfill. And when the investigation was done, the finding came back that this was dereliction of duty. So now, of course, there's in the absence of any investigation, because of course I was kicked out of Congress again before I could commence an investigation of what just exactly did happen in Louisiana with respect, particularly to the treatment of human remains, then I was criticized, but there hasn't been an investigation. And I would suspect that if we did have an investigation, thank goodness we had an investigation of 911 human remains, finding that they were dumped in a landfill. Can you believe that? And then, of course, the final thing that I brought up was about the Capitol Hill Police Department. And it just so happens that there was a demonstration just literally weeks ago held by former Black Capitol Hill police officers demonstrating the racism in the Capitol Hill Police Department. And then not only that, But we have the testimony on the record of the U.S. Senate's lone black GOP member who says that his interactions with the Capitol Hill police amounted to him being targeted. And so now, of course, this, of course, provides evidence for the fact that I, too, was targeted. But I was targeted because I came to the defense of the black Capitol Hill police officers whose superior officer called them nigger. And because I came to their defense and support, I was targeted. And I was targeted by in an act of racist provocation. So at any rate, now we know, I don't think there's anyone who would say that there isn't racism in police departments across the United States. So here again, the evidence for what I said is clear, and I was kicked out of office not once but twice because I dared to tell the truth. Africa. This is Cynthia McKinney, and you're listening to Cynthia's Midnight Oil on the Pacifica Radio Network. Up next, a discussion of recent geopolitical events around the world. Just as I was lamenting that India signed an unprecedented agreement with the U.S. to allow U.S. troops to use military bases on Indian soil, a sliver of light peeked through the clouds. Russia's rejoinder to this unprecedented act and huge BRICS disappointment was to conduct concurrent but separate exercises with both Pakistan and India. And then the storm clouds completely covered the sky. A bolt of lightning streaked across the sky. Thunder is coming closer and closer and more often by the minute. I must seek shelter, but where can I go? My activism is the only thing that can save me, us, the world, our planet. Now, what in the world has got me talking like this? Just as the Syrian Arab Army was about to make a breakthrough and retake Aleppo from ISIS, the U.S. did a strange thing. It threatened Russia, basically declaring war on Russia if any U.S. assets, that means ISIS folks, are targeted by Russia. So now the ante has been upped. How many times have I said on this show that the Israelis now call the territory formerly occupied by Syria as the area that used to be known as Syria? How many times have I said that? Syria was declared dead by Israel a long time ago. Russia is trying to resuscitate a corpse. Now, the Balkanization of Syria has begun. Whether de jure or de facto, Israel has won round one. All done with U.S. money, U.S. soldiers, and the U.S. Rolodex, as now dead U.K. Foreign Secretary Robin Cook put it, of Muslim mercenaries. And people in the U.S. are afraid of Muslims. It just shows how low Americans, whose ancestors genocided Native Americans, trafficked and enslaved Africans, and nuked the Japanese, have sunk that they could lose control of the policy of their own country and be so hoodwinked as to believe that the Muslims, whose countries are literally being ripped apart as we speak, constitute a threat to them. Those now in control of U.S. policy must be laughing at the descendants of the pilgrims all the way to the bank. And now they want to send your broke sons and daughters off to fight Russia and China and who knows who else. I guess I'd be laughing too if I didn't love the people on this planet and this planet itself so much, the planet that nourishes us and sustains life. Now, speaking of breaking news, did you hear that the U.S. government paid a British public relations firm almost $700 million U.S. taxpayer dollars to create fake terrorist videos? Folks, this is outrageous. How much more of this can you take? I can't take not one more minute of it, nor one more dime of it. Ken O'Keefe has a solution to this, but it and he have come under so much fire and criticism that I don't know if he's going to be able to activate his plan. However, in the meantime, we all need to be figuring out how we can do legally what Donald Trump did, that's pay no taxes. Sadly, India has now firmly placed itself in the U.S.-Israel camp. Furthermore, it is helping in the dismemberment of Pakistan again after it aided in the creation of Bangladesh. Bordering China, the U.S. isn't going to leave Pakistan alone, and it won't leave Afghanistan either. An opinion piece from the state-run Global Times in China wrote that by joining the U.S. anti-China alliance, India would bring geostrategic rivalries to itself. That's a mouthful. India is a country with many different ethnicities and religions. I should think that the last thing it would want to do is diverge from its secular, non-aligned past and become a bit player pawn in somebody else's game. But that's exactly what India under BJP has done. Meanwhile, Forbes crows that India is now firmly a U.S. ally in the U.S. containment of China policy. In one fell swoop, India under BJP, the party that has adopted Hindutva or Hinduness as an important part of its program, has moved from being a friend of those countries fighting for their independence and sovereignty to hanging out with the big dogs. India is now even voting with Israel at the United Nations. And this now sets up U.S. action, not only in West Asia, not only in Central Asia, but now also in South Asia, an area that had up until now escaped the U.S. scorched earth policy. This is not looking good, folks. Look for more U.S.-induced misery in South Asia as a result of these moves by India. And the BRICS summit takes place in a few weeks. And guess where? India. So let's see what happens there if they have a summit at all. Lots of changes are taking place in just a short span of time. A week in politics can seem an eternity. And then, when I couldn't think things could get worse, my Danish internet buddy, who commiserated online with me during the destruction of Libya, sent me this breaking news. The U.S. war against Syria has now spilled over into Iran. Just what the Israel firsters in the war crowd want. His story, posted on my Facebook page, which is Cynthia McKinney, PhD, and also on his own news site, NSNBC.com, is that the Iranian Revolutionary Guard has now engaged in heavy warfare inside Iran with U.S.-backed Kurds. My friend, Dr. Christoph Lehman, writes, and I quote, "The war in Syria and Iraq is spreading into Iran as part of a complex geopolitical chess game involving Iran, Israel, Russia, as well as core NATO members." When he sent this to me and I read it, it was bone-chilling and spine-tingling. October surprise, here we come. I'm sorry, but this just makes discussing Hillary's podium gate seem all so trivial.
Stretch out. Keep the muscle tight. Happiness is time property. Your possess quality. Lot of mercy. Why? No. Girl, child. Woman, you're pretty like a flower that alone I'm gonna do. I know you're pretty, so man, still I live you. You look good. From a look good point of view. I know you look good, no man them look good, no you can't.
For those who are just tuning in, this is Cynthia's Midnight Oil on the Pacifica Radio Network, and I'm Cynthia McKinney. So there you have it. In a jam-packed show tonight, we learned that real crises stalk the next president in the South China Sea, in South Asia, in West Asia, in North and Central Africa. But you won't hear any of that substance, so U.S. voters can evaluate the policy proposals of the various candidates. No! We will, however, continue to hear about Bimbo's 3 o'clock a.m. tweets and Kim Kardashian. We won't hear about anything that will make us more informed than we already are. All of this is being done to us, and it is being done in our name because we're paying for it. Let's put an end to these wars, the neoliberal policy squeezing every cent from us, the Federal Reserve, and everything else that makes it easy for them to keep their stranglehold on us. We have got to stop paying taxes. We've got to starve the beast or feed it so much that it implodes from its own obesity, represented by our resistance. For now, the clearest way to do that is to remember ABC when you go to the polls. Anybody but Clinton? Hashtag never Hillary.
Put the tongue in 90s like a warm shooting. Any of you want it, dear heart. 24/7 with the love. Right below the candlelight. Pink champagne.
You've been listening to Cynthia's Midnight Oil on the Pacifica Radio Network.
But that's alone I'm gonna do. You're pretty like a flower, smart still and live you. Pretty like a wa, shabba don't know what. The way you're pretty is to set the soul on fire. It's not the pretty face, it's the capture. The property that...